Welcome back, one and all, to another day, another show, another year here at the Damage Report. I remain John Iadarola, and I'm very lucky to be joined on the first show of the new year by the mayor of Enfield, North Carolina, and the founding principal of Black Male Voter Project, Mondale Robinson. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me.
Always glad to have you here. Glad to have you here to break down the news. We might be getting updates on the big speaker battle live on the show. We've got a little bit of chaos to start off the new year. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to a good year of news. How are you doing?
I feel the same way. I'm super excited about this drama that's playing out in the house right now. So let's watch it and find out.
Yeah, I'm just hope, like, I know everyone's like, okay, it's most likely gonna be McCarthy, but like maybe it's this guy, maybe it's Jim Jordan. I think there's gotta be like a 1 in 1,000 chance it ends up being Ilhan Omar. So I'm going to put all my money on that and hope for good things. Anyway, with that said, we do have a lot that we're gonna be talking about through the course of today's show. Not only Kevin McCarthy's Judgment Day, but also Maxwell Frost striking back at out of touch Republicans who don't understand the high cost of housing and related issues. We've got, I can't believe it's possible, but more new lies from George Santos and potential legal ramifications for some of them. So we'll be talking about that. The attempted recalibration on abortion that the GOP is trying to do right now. And in the aftermath, we're gonna be joined by TYT Sports own Rick Strom to break down the tragic situation that happened last night with Damar Hamlin. And so definitely stick around for that. In advance of that though, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. And if you wanna send us any comments, tweets, or super chats during the show, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Mondale, are you ready to start the show?
Let's get it.
Let's do it. Let's jump into the big story of the day.
Last night I was presented the only way to have 218 votes. If I provided certain members with certain positions, certain gavels to take over the church committee, to have certain budgets. And they even came to the position where one Matt Gaetz said, I don't care if we go to plurality and we elect Hakeem Jeffries and it hurts the new frontline members not to get reelected.
Oh, it's Judgment Day, all right, for Kevin McCarthy. He has been waiting years for this moment to finally become Speaker of the House, picking his battles, flip-flopping on his positions to satisfy the far right. And today he gets to find out maybe if it works, but there's a lot of obstacles between him and the speakership. He referenced one right there, Matt Gaetz and others apparently wanting certain concessions. But Kevin McCarthy says, I'm not gonna do this. This is not about any one individual's ambitions, except that it very, very much is. Maybe just not Matt Gaetz. This is about Kevin McCarthy's ambitions. This dude has been trying to have his cake and eat it too, trying to appear early on as if he was some kind of moderate while giving the far right whatever they want, like cozying up to Donald Trump. Then in the immediate aftermath of the insurrection, putting the blame rightly on Donald Trump, and then immediately backtracking once he figured out that that wasn't gonna be politically popular. And so this guy is going to finally see the dice have been cast. Is it gonna come up, Snake Eyes? Or is he gonna become speaker? He needs to today win a majority of those present and voting. 218 if every member of the House were to attend and cast a vote, and I'm assuming most will be there. Republicans are gonna control 222 seats, so there's not much room for defections. And as of right now, there are the five that they talk about, the big five members who say they won't vote for him, at least at this point. Matt Gaetz, who we've already talked about, Andy Biggs, Matt Rosendale, Ralph Norman, and Bob Good. But that's like just the figureheads. There's apparently far more than that. McCarthy apparently now has acknowledged that there are likely 20 or so members voting against him, although who's to say at this point how firm any one of their resolves is? So he could still very well become speaker, but it is not a guaranteed thing. Mondale, what do you think so far?
Yeah, I think we're gonna see one of those moments where we may have 100 ballots before we determine who's the speaker. So that's happened before in our history. You know, it was in the 1800s, but you know, this Republican Party is definitely divided. We've seen Biggs get nominated already against McCarthy right now. So while the vote is on the way, we already know that, like you said, the big five will not be voting for him. If that other 10 or 15 people either vote present or not for him, there is a space where, like you said, Ilhan Omar's name might pack up, end up on a later ballot, or Hakeem Jeffries might be the speaker. So I'm super excited about what could possibly happen right now. McCarthy, like you said, it's funny that you said snake eyes because he's absolutely a snake. This gentleman showed that he has no spine when he did call Donald Trump after the 6th of the riot in the Capitol and say that this is your fault, you need to stop it. And then when it became time to set up the January 6th panel, he pretended that nothing happened. Trump did nothing wrong. So that level of shifting does not speak of leadership. Actually, him being quiet about a topic we're going to talk about later in the show, Santos, shows the lack of leadership that it takes to run a caucus and definitely to run the People's House. So I'm super hyped that he may not be the speaker and there may be a Democratic speaker, even though we don't have the majority. I want to see what's going to happen today. I'm like a kid in the candy store because I have no faith in McCarthy. And while people may say ever since he's been in leadership, Republicans picked up seats in the House, and that's the only place it happened. It's not been a significant gain, and this is why we are where we are right now, where he may not wind up as speaker at the end of the day.
Yeah, look, if you're going to elect as speaker, the thing that got you more seats in the House, then hello, speaker gerrymandering. That's what got them the extra seats. They did partisan gerrymanders in a number of states, which the Supreme Court accepted. The Democrats in places like New York tried to do it themselves. Those maps were knocked down. That easily gets you the 5 seats or whatever for the majority. So he's going to claim credit for that. But he expected that it would be a much bigger margin. He once specifically said in an interview, this will not be a 5 seat majority. And so, okay, well, like how much credit do you think you deserve? In any event, we're gonna see. He could still end up speaker. I think that the most likely single outcome is still that he becomes speaker. And the reason that I say that is I think he's going to cave even more than he already has. But let's be very clear as we launch into possibly him being speaker. He might be in leadership. He might technically be a big L leader. But Kevin McCarthy is not, will not, never has been a leader in any way. He does whatever he thinks he needs to do to get and hold and maintain power. That's it. He has been terrified of the far right for many, many years. And the fact that he might be in charge and terrified of the far right should terrify all of us. In any event, I want to move to a little bit more of the video because he called out Matt Gaetz right there. Well, Matt Gaetz had thoughts of his own or things to say at the very least. Here's Matt Gaetz.
But we were threatened by my committee chairman to be on the Armed Services Committee, Mr. Rogers, that if we did not vote for Mr. McCarthy, we would be removed from committees. Our position is that if Kevin McCarthy is the Speaker of the House and we don't have an ability to ensure that there is oomph behind the agenda and energy behind our oversight, that the committee assignments don't mean that much anyway. I'm not here to participate in some puppet show where we pass a bunch of messaging bills, send them to the Senate, watch them die, fail to use leverage, and don't hold the Biden administration accountable. I don't want to relive the Benghazi experience where it's just theater pretending to be oversight, right? We can do better than that, and that's our purpose today.
You have three votes here. Okay, so he doesn't want to participate in a puppet show. He wants real substance. Like on what policies? Really nothing. Look, best case scenario, they're largely going to be passing BS legislation and then having the Democrats in the Senate stop it. I mean, that's pretty much baked into this situation right now. I do like his call out of the time wasted on Benghazi, though, because most of the Republicans in the House seem desperately want to relive Benghazi. They might call it Hunter Biden this time. But pointless, unproductive oversight seems very much to be on the menu for the next couple of years. Mondale, what do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. And while you were talking, John, I don't know if you saw this, but McCarthy just lost on the first ballot. He did not get a majority. So the first ballot just happened.
Breaking news.
He got the first ballot. So it's going to keep going, but he didn't get a majority.
Really fast, Mondale. Thank you so much for giving me that breaking news. Because I believe it's been since, I'm just gonna, somebody ask Michael Shore, I think it's since like 1923 since someone lost. Because normally they wouldn't, if they don't think they're gonna have it, they're not gonna go up for it. So it's been like almost exactly 100 years, I believe. But thank you for that breaking news.
Yeah, and you, one of the big five, of course, you know, Biggs has been nominated. So he's on the ballot running against McCarthy as well. So the drama will continue. But it's funny to hear Matt Gaetz talk about what he don't want to be a part of. It actually sounded like he was saying, I don't want to be Matt Gaetz, because everything he was complaining about is his life, has been his life. You don't want to be a part of the puppet show. Do you remember Donald Trump's administration when you were running across the lawn, leaking secrets to the administration about what was going on in the House? What are you talking about? You are the puppet show. So this is projecting at its best. I think though it's wonderful to see this slime play out in public so people can understand. Like you said, he said there's no behind his agenda. What agenda does the Republican Party have at this point other than something racist, something sexist, and something outdated? I don't know their agenda at all.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, I know Cenk has given Matt Gaetz some credit on a couple of small things that he's willing to work with Democrats on, like seemingly some anti-corruption stuff. I think if I recall correctly, I think he's okay on weed. So I don't think that Matt Gaetz is the worst of all of them on policy. Public persona is garbage, and I think he should be and is being investigated for some possible illegal acts. But anyway, yeah, the idea that his group, those five, and the others around him, which we'll get to, are differentiated from the others because they're more serious in general. Come on, who are you trying to kid? But anyway, I just wanted to read one or two more quotes from him. He said, if you want to drain the swamp, you cannot put the biggest alligator in charge of the exercise. I'm a Florida man and I know of what I speak. That's not bad. I don't know. It's stupid. God only knows who he would put. And he said at that point, I'm a no. I'm assuming he voted no on that first round. Which, by the way, so you said Andy Biggs is already up. Others that they're saying could potentially, like if it's not McCarthy, and it could still very well be McCarthy, it could be Steve Scalise. You might have Patrick McHenry, Jim Jordan, or you know, if not them, then maybe we get into the area of you know some Republicans siding with Democrats to pick a reasonable Republican. We'll have to see about that. I don't know what that actually means in practice. But I want to get to some more of this. How is Kevin McCarthy going to try to win over the holdouts? Well, he's tried a number of different strategies over the past couple of months. Recently, he unveiled a package of rules governing how the House operates, including the so-called Holman rule, which allows lawmakers to use spending bills to defund specific programs and fire federal officials or reduce their pay. Now, this is technically, this is filed under how the House operates. It's largely how to stop government from operating. They're going to be defunding a bunch of stuff, firing people that they're like people like Fauci and stuff like that. That's what this is about. It's to give more like retribution powers to the holdouts. You have an end of the use of proxy voting and remote committee proceedings. Why would they want to get rid of those? Well, because those were instituted under COVID rules to try to stop people from getting sick and dying. They have to performatively be against literally any change made to save lives. So they want to get rid of that. It proposes a vote to form a select subcommittee on weaponization of the federal government under the House Judiciary Committee. That'll be fun. As well as a select committee on strategic competition between the United States and the Chinese Communist Party. That's going to be just great. But by far the biggest concession that he's already made, and he might have to go farther than this, is he agreed to a rule that would allow five lawmakers to call a snap vote at any time to oust the speaker, which I understand there obviously has to be some sort of mechanism to get rid of the speaker. But just for historically, it has not been the case that any five lawmakers at any point can snap their fingers and have a vote to kick the guy out. But he's already done that. And I ask you this, dear viewer, a guy who is as ambitious as Kevin McCarthy, who wants power more than you want anything, how desperate does he have to be to agree to a rule like that? That can, let's say, will result in him eventually being kicked out. That is a truly desperate act, Mondale, in my view, anyway.
Are we going to a different system of government? I couldn't believe when I heard about these concessions, it blew my mind. Like, what are we talking about? Is this a loss of faith vote? We're gonna just call them up. We're gonna switch speaker houses every month. Do you know how desperate you have to be to want to be leader, Big L, like you said, to concede this to this crazy Congress? Marjorie Taylor is in this caucus. Next week he will be called up if he didn't do what they said, and they want to do some craziness. I am super I think this is a testament to why we need to pay attention to our politics and the dangers of what can happen when people sit out elections. This is spooky. And like you said, it's been a long time since we've seen someone get defeated on the first ballot or any ballot for leader. But it also shows that the Republican caucus is dysfunctional at the highest levels right now. When the best they have to offer is Kevin McCarthy. I am not happy, and I'll go a step further. You said Gates isn't the worst of them. He's damn sure close to it. I am extremely nervous every time I think about how close people are to listening to this man, how much money he fundraised off of the shenanigans he's saying. And it may seem anecdotal, but we're talking about his position, him and four other Congress folks, position of power, or close they are to control Kevin McCarthy, who's willing to do anything to maintain his power. So these people will have this possible speakerships, leadership roles in some important caucuses. And I'm nervous about that, especially as it pertains to these people controlling the purse of the United States.
Yeah, well, and to your point, Kevin McCarthy was saying, he wasn't specific, but he said they want to be the chairs of certain committees. And again, not to address the true problems facing America, but to wield government as a weapon. Like the transparent thing is the subcommittee on weaponization of the federal government. That's all these people want. They don't want government to solve problems. They want to attack, and that's what they're gonna do. With the five people to allow him to be ousted, look, I think there should be some mechanism. I don't think that simply because you get voted in, you should be good for, you know, forever. I don't think that in anything. I think it's weird that Supreme Court justices are there for life. I think it's super weird that Kyrsten Sinema can get elected on a platform, then come in, do a 180. Everyone in her state hates her and stuck with her. It's gonna be a rough 6 years for you. I think that's really weird. But by the same token, like, it does seem weird to want to go even further than just any group of five weirdos can call for him to be kicked out. And let's be clear, the five threshold is not acceptable to these people. Let's move now to this next video.
So I've said from the beginning that my hard line was the motion to vacate, single member motion to vacate. You cannot demand more responsibility and less accountability. And Kevin McCarthy was taking the path of Nancy Pelosi and following her precedents with the motion to vacate.
So to be clear, Lauren Boebert wants any one individual rando, probably her, to be able to call for the speaker to be ousted at any time. Likely over and over and over again. And think about that. Like, if Lauren Boebert is angry at Kevin McCarthy or whoever is the speaker and cannot convince a single other member of Congress to band together with her, she thinks she should still be able to call for him to be ousted. Lauren, how do you think that vote's gonna go if you can't convince anyone else to support you on calling for the vote? It's purely symbolic. And there, like, again, I don't like Kevin McCarthy, not a big fan of Nancy Pelosi, but saying he's following the Nancy Pelosi press. No, he called for five people to be able to oust him. That's not what we had under Nancy Pelosi. That's not the way the House has ever been run. That is a massive, probably damaging concession by Kevin McCarthy. And even that isn't enough for Lauren Boebert, Mondale.
It's her hard line, she said. So she's not gonna vote for him then. That's what she's saying, basically, because no one is going to allow one single vote to call for. That's disruption. The House would do nothing except for vote on who's the leader, who's the Speaker of the House. This is beyond ridiculous. And this is the pettiness I'm talking about when the districts are so gerrymandered. No one can test Boebert. Like, she should not be elected. This is ridiculous. But we know because of her district and how it's drawn, she will be elected over and over and over again until someone a little crazier than her is presented. I am absolutely disgusted by this person. Bikes for Trump. That's a great picture. I think this is the shenanigans that's going to cost them their majority real quick. I am convinced that the American people is going to see this dysfunction, and like you said, their agenda to have these sham trials or cases or panels about Biden's son's computer. Hunter Biden's computer, and their fascination with that is more than what it was with Hillary Clinton's email. And we know that it doesn't matter to them, that it's no substance there. It, like you said, it's performative, and it's performative for one reason. It's going to raise money. It's going to excite their base, and the base is going to call it corruption all the way through, even though they'll present no real evidence about any corruption other than their own. I do want to go back to something that Matt Gaetz said, because I don't like Matt Gaetz. And also, I am from North Carolina, a swamp town. Enfield, my town, is built on a swamp. People need to stop saying drain the swamp. Swamps are actually clean places. Swamps provide us clean water. People don't understand. Talking about drain the swamp is a dumb idea. And Matt,
I like the defense of swamps.
Yeah, swamps are nice.
I like it. It's a complex ecosystem with a lot of unique flora and fauna. I like. We need to do more advocacy for swamps. Anyway, I want to give you just a little bit more of Lauren Boebert, and then I have one more thing I want people to keep in mind as we go forward in these votes. But first, here's Boebert.
And so now here we are, being sworn at instead of being sworn in. And we could have had this solved months ago. I have been working every day to unify the Republican Party for the American people. And yesterday, we had a deal that was not a selfish deal in any way for Kevin McCarthy to get him the gavel on the first ballot. And he eagerly dismissed us.
Okay, she's not working every day. Like, she's making insane, ever shifting demands. And again, she's not making them of me. So for once, it doesn't bother me a ton. Kevin McCarthy, remember, is a terrible guy. Bad things happening to him is probably good karmically for the universe. But let's also not pretend that she's holding out on substance. She's not demanding a vote on healthcare reform. She's not demanding a vote on raising the minimum wage. These are not strong principled stands to accomplish goals to help the American people. They're insane personal vindictive goals that go even beyond the already insane concessions that Kevin McCarthy has made to her. And not just her, the others as well. I will add one potential concession that in the end might be made that allows him to become speaker. I mean, part of her and Matt Gaetz's opposition is supposed to be ideological or whatever, but this is also about the image. In the end, again, he doesn't need to win over all of them. He can afford to lose a couple of votes. And so if he locks down which of them most wants to be able to vote against him, but get what they want, then they could, as a bargaining chip, get to be one of those few that basically for free votes against him, even though they're agreeing to a deal that results in him being speaker. So that in the end could allow a few of his largest detractors to still be able to say, I stood against him until the very end, even if in reality, they're in a back room cutting a deal and he gets to be speaker. We don't know. Maybe at some point Mondale will cut in with breaking news that we have the second vote. I don't know exactly when that's going to happen, but he could still end up being speaker. Any other thoughts, Mondale?
I think you're right. I think he will end up being speaker. I think what will happen is detractors will eventually vote present, and it's not enough Democrats to stop him unless 15 people continually vote against him. And I don't see that happening, 20, 30 ballots in. So eventually McCarthy will be speaker. He'll be a weak speaker. Well, he's already a weak leader. So he'll be a weak speaker because of the concessions he's made to these unhinged folk on the right, like Boebert. And I think what will happen is we'll see Jim Jordan, like you said, or somebody in the likes, Biggs, that will become more powerful and lead a portion of his caucus in a way that will disrupt his entire leadership in the speaker. So I'm super happy about, like I said, I keep saying this about the dysfunction, because I think this is just a way for progressives to move in and become more powerful. So I'm excited about this dysfunction as it play out. I am sad that nothing will happen over the next 2 years that needs both houses to pass. Anything short of Biden doing, and we can't bet on Biden too much as progressives, but anything short of Biden writing or signing an executive order will not happen in Washington, D.C. So talk about sticky and swamps. That's what we're about to get.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, we have you, a swamp expert, to help us navigate it. Anyway, okay, we're gonna get to other news. Everyone remember, every day we're giving out a Blue Apron gift card to one of our members on the different platforms. It sends in a comment that we particularly like. So send them in and we'll choose one, hopefully for the next break. With that said, let's jump into more news, starting with this.
Do you feel like a member of Congress yet?
I'm definitely feeling the love, especially from a lot of the Democrats, especially in the different caucuses I'm joining.
And when you were running, you had to do some Uber work, right? You worked as an Uber driver.
Yeah.
Because you needed to... You needed to live while you were also running for Congress. What's it going to be like up here? I mean, this is not cheap. Do you have to...
Yeah. I mean, it's not cheap. I'm dealing with it right now, getting denied from apartments, trying to figure out where to live because I have bad credit. I'm probably just going to have to, like, couch surf for a little bit.
That's Maxwell Frost, the youngest ever person elected to the House, member of Gen Z, talking about, like, this is a great moment. Going to be, you know, entering Congress, but also some continuing problems. But we've already talked about on the show, problems in getting housing, considering a history of bad credit. And isn't it great to have a representative who understands these issues, who not just understands, but has actually lived these issues? That seems like a great thing. Not everybody actually thinks so, though. RNC Research, just does like attack social media postings for the Republicans, posted this. Florida Democrat Congressman-elect Maxwell Frost, whose salary as a member of Congress will be $174,000 a year, says he's probably just gonna have to like couch surf for a little bit. You get it? He's gonna make money now that he's become amazingly, you know, historically, he's become a congressman at that young age. And so how dare he complain even briefly? There's a bit of a gap in logic there. Maxwell actually addresses it, saying, so out of touch that they don't understand how renting an apartment works. Let me break this down. I don't get my first paycheck till February, and I don't have a lot of money. When you move into an apartment, you pay first, deposit, sometimes last, and for furniture. So much for that RNC research. Again, it's not research. You'll notice that they didn't like post a whole bunch of facts about the state of housing and how expensive it is. They just thought, oh, this is someone who is an inspirational, aspirational figure to a new generation, speaking directly to the issues that millions of Americans are faced with every day. Screw him, he's rich somehow. Even though he hasn't received a single dollar for it, he's rich, he doesn't get to complain. All of his problems should be solved. I'm glad that he had a strong response. Mondale, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, like in that tweet, it says his salary will be. What will be is not now. Like that is the ridiculousness at which Republicans, and to name it research, just because you call it research don't mean it's research. This is absolutely disgusting. And it also fails to speak to the fact that people are literally suffering in the nation capital because it's so expensive to have housing. And $174,000, unfortunately, does not make you rich. We wish it did, but in DC, it's barely enough to survive on what it will take. And especially when you say you have bad credit, it is impossible almost to find living situations in house. I mean, right now, I think in DC, if you are homeless, there are a lot of people that are homeless. I think the waiting list to get housing is 16 years. That's almost a death sentence. So the idea that the Republicans—
16?
Yeah, I think if you get on the list right now in DC, it's like 16 years before you get housing. It is absolutely disgusting that people are playing with this idea. And the fact that your credit determines if you should have a house is something unbelievable when we don't know the algorithm to create credits. I mean, so it is absolutely disgusting. We need to get away from this model that people can and can't live places based on something that we have no control over, like a credit score. And the fact that we have the first Gen Zer representative being elected, even though they are one of the largest voting blocks in our country. He's suffering, like you said, from what most Americans are, either bad credit or living paycheck to paycheck without a lot of money to pay first month's rent and also a deposit, which is probably $2,000 or $3,000 in DC. So the Republican, that was a massive loss. And like you said, I'm glad Frost was prepared for a comeback to explain to these idiots how this works.
Yeah, no, 100%. That stat that you listed is amazing. That's the sort of research maybe RNC research could be doing, telling us about that sort of thing. Well, we're not RNC research, but we do have our producers, which I'm going to call TDR research. And here is what they found. The cost of living in Washington, D.C. is way higher than the national average, more than 51% higher than the national average. Almost everything is more expensive, especially the cost of housing. To purchase a house, the average purchase price is more than double the national average. Literally, the only thing that's cheaper on average is healthcare for some reason. I don't know why, but housing is way more expensive. Everything is far more expensive. The rent prices are higher than New York, or they're comparable to New York and Miami, but way higher than the national average. A one bedroom apartment in DC, the rent is nearly $1,800. That is crazy. And you can see the distribution of rents in this chart we're going to show you. Most of the stock available is over $2,000. And again, it's easy to hear that he's going to make $174,000 and think, oh, he's rich. Well, look, he's doing, he will not now, will be doing better than most people. But think about it, if he gets that $174,000 and he isn't independently wealthy, which he's not, okay, he's going to lose half of that to taxes, probably. He's going to lose half of what remains or more to housing and things like that. Let's say he saves every cent he can. What is that going to be? $25,000 a year? How is he going to buy a house in DC in the next decade, maybe? Again, this is like, if you actually care about the truth and care about the experience of people, you'll actually interrogate these claims. But RNC Research isn't interested in that. They're interested in taking down Maxwell Frost because he's a Democrat and he's young, he's a person of color, so he needs to go. Any other thoughts, Mondale?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely tragic. I mean, and we should go further and state that the housing crisis in DC is so serious that they had to put a ban on how you use Airbnb, right? DC created a law that said you could only rent one room like all the time in your house. If you rent your entire house more than 10 times a year, then you have to pay hotel tax. And this is because so many corporations was flying in, buying up entire apartment buildings and only using them for Airbnb. This is not a joking matter. In DC, the cost of living in DC is extremely high, but our housing, the housing and homelessness problem in this country is so serious that this is nothing they should have joked about. I mean, it is absolutely ridiculous, the number of people that are couch surfing. And like you said, they didn't use this moment to highlight the struggle that these people are dealing with. It is absolutely ridiculous, especially in the light we see Finland just eliminated homeless in their country, and we are nowhere near that process. So I think it's absolutely disgusting, especially when we saw Finland do it at a cost that's cheaper than dealing with homelessness. And I think, you know, this is another way that the RNC just missed the mark. And it's par for the course with that group of folk.
John, listen, his conduct is embarrassing and unbecoming. And it is certainly a distraction. His election has been certified, so he will be seated in this Congress.
Okay, apologies. Mondale, what were you gonna say?
I'm so sorry about that, team. Just that vote right now is 181 Akeem Jeffers, 172 McCarthy, and 10 for Biggs and 9 for others.
Interesting. That is hilarious that Akeem Jeffers is up. That does mean that because the vote is split enough, there won't be a clear majority, but it's still funny. The continuing humiliation of Kevin McCarthy is giving me strength. Okay, we'll check in on that a little bit more later on. For now, let's jump back into C block.
Listen, his conduct is embarrassing and unbecoming, and it is certainly a distraction. His election has been certified, so he will be seated in this Congress. But ultimately, obviously, we will see what the investigations come back with. There are numerous investigations at federal, state, and local, as well as international. And it's very unfortunate.
Yeah, I would say pretty much everything about George Santos and his election and the way most Republicans have responded to it is unfortunate. Now, thankfully, that individual, Michael Lawler, who is a Republican representing a part of New York, is critical of George Santos. And you like to see that, especially because did you know that we haven't gotten to all the lies? I know we've talked about it multiple times. No, there are more lies than we've covered for George Santos. But more important than the lies will be the consequences. We'll get to those in a minute. First, the lies. So, one, we talked about this story about his mom and 9/11. There was a fact in there that I took as a given about her being the first female executive at a major financial institution. That was determined to apparently be a lie. She died in 2016. A Brazilian community newspaper at the time described her as a cook. Mr. Santos's friends and former roommates recalled her as a hardworking, friendly woman who spoke only Portuguese and made her living cleaning homes and selling food. None of those interviewed by the Times can recall any instance of her working in finance, not just being an executive in finance, but working in finance. By the way, being a person who cleans homes, being a cook, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. I don't understand why you wouldn't run on that as a congressman, that your parents worked hard, generally thankless jobs to give you the opportunities that you have. Inventing this farcical thing where she was the head of Goldman Sachs or something is deeply weird to lie about one's mother. Okay, But that's not the only one. He lied about his school. I know what you're thinking. He lied about his college's business school. No, he lied about other schools too. He lied about his high school. He said he attended Horace Mann School, a prestigious private institution in the Bronx, that he dropped out in 2006 before graduating and earning an equivalency diploma. That was determined to be a lie. A spokesman for Horace Mann said the school had no record of his attending at all. And let's throw one more ridiculous lie on there. His ex-boyfriend has been interviewed and said at one point, George Santos presented him with supposedly tickets to Hawaii. The tickets were fake. He was lying about going to Hawaii. Then he stole his ex-boyfriend's phone and apparently pawned it. I don't know if that's true, but at this point, I'm not discounting any claims made about George Santos. If that is his name, Mondale, what do you think?
What is going on? George Santos is, this is beyond an anomaly. What, the lies just keep coming out. And the fact that the Republicans are so quiet about how ridiculous this person's life, well, the lies that he told that was his life is, it's unbelievable to me. The fact that you are lying about your dead mother and her life is unbelievable. You have no moral compass at this point. You are lost. And I'm not here to judge you, but I am. Cause wow. And the silence from other folk that are gonna be in his caucus is unbelievable to me. The fact that Santos is continually coming up with more lies daily. Yep. Is unbelievable. And this thing about his boyfriend and the phone being pawned, I have to believe it because it fits the course. I mean, it sounds like something you would do if you lie about your high school, if you lie about your college, if you lie about your work. It also tells me you have no real friends. People are, how would you have friends and you are willing to tell these type of lies on a national scale? No one is close to this person because you need help. In a serious way, you are a compulsive liar about everything. You hate your life at this point because you don't know what your life is. I think his ex-boyfriend even said, he said he was an investor at Goldman Sachs, but he never went to work. He never left the house. Like, it's just like you are, at this point, you're lying to people that know you're lying, and no one is close to a person like this. And it is strange that you are headed to Congress. He should be expelled. Absolutely, people voted for him, but they didn't. They voted for all the lies they were told, which should be enough. I know it's a dangerous road to say if politicians lie, they should be recalled. But this is extreme, to the next level extreme. Like, nothing you sold to people were true. You had 18 properties. Oh, no, you don't. You said you had a college degree. Oh, no, you don't. You said you worked at Goldman Sachs. Oh, no, you didn't. So all of the things you ran on were false. And I think that should be enough to get you recalled.
Yeah. Yeah. He makes Herschel Walker look honest-ish at this point. It's not that he's the first to lie. It's that it's so numerous. Almost every fact was a lie. They're so baseless. They're not exaggerations. They're just wholly made up. And he seems so lacking in remorse. Super fast, as I said, there are these investigations. Not only is he being investigated in New York, but also in Brazil, they're looking into this. He apparently back when he was younger, used $700 with a stolen checkbook to buy stuff from a store. Now he denies to this day that he committed any crimes, but he admitted to them that he had done it at the time. He actually appeared before the police in November 2010 to say he was responsible, and then he fled the country. He just fled and remade himself. So they're gonna be looking into that. It's not definite at this point what authority they will have to force him to testify or to appear. He's no longer in the country. That's why you flee a country. But it hardly looks good for him. And remember, he's being investigated for potential fraudulent use of campaign funds, which we've talked about previously on the show. So this guy has all the lies, but he also maybe has some financial issues or some legal issues. And remember, while people like Donald Trump can evade basically any, you know, consequences whatsoever, George Santos is not the former president of the United States. He's potentially one that could be picked off, but we'll have to see. Okay, with that said, we're gonna take our second break. We come back, more stories to talk about. We've got a horrible story involving a cop, and then who Donald Trump is blaming for the GOP issues these days. We'll have that for you after this. Okay, everybody, we got a couple important stories to talk about, so let's jump into it. Two state lawmakers in Maryland are hoping to pass a bill that's going to prevent police officers from receiving any sort of retirement benefits after they've been convicted of a felony crime. Why are they going to be doing this? Well, first of all, let's be clear, because they can still get the retirement benefits even if they've been convicted of a felony, and that's bonkers. But in this case, particularly, it has to do with a guy named Michael Browning. So he's got 27 indictments against him. He's a 50-year veteran of Gunpowder Falls State Park, accused of raping at least two female park employees. Just absolutely horrific allegations that have been made here. And as of right now, stands to still get the retirement funds. There are people trying to stop it. So House Delegate Janelle Wilkins raised this issue a couple of weeks ago, pointing out that he's sitting in jail accused of violent rapes and could still receive these pension checks. I want to give you some details on the allegations. Browning allegedly met one of the victims when she was a teenager and hired her as a seasonal employee when she was an adult. When the two worked together, Browning and the woman, who was 40 years his junior, had a 6-year-long romantic relationship. Police say that during a phone call with her earlier this year, he admitted to raping her at least 10 times. He was arrested in September, indicted by a grand jury in assault and rape charges in October. But despite that phone call, where he admitted to it, he claims that he is still innocent. And on November 30th, he resigned, which made him eligible to collect his pension and sidestep the immediate financial repercussions of his crimes. There's 24 states, by the way, of which Maryland is one, that has no pension forfeiture laws on the books, which one would call a crazy oversight, except in this case, and in many cases, this is not an oversight. This is by design. The unions representing the police want there to still be able, despite you being convicted of crime, you still be able to get your pension. They say that if that was to be banned, it would hurt recruitment. And I say to that, if that hurts recruitment, you shouldn't be recruiting those people anyway, because that's horrible. But Mondale, what do you think?
This is a continuation of why I'm not out here screaming about we need cops or support cops. This is absolutely ludicrous to me. The fact that unions have been able to negotiate this level of this type of contract and worrying about that it's going to affect their recruitment is scary as hell. And it also explains why we have the problem in this country with the institution of policing. This level of like 10 times he raped this young lady. And the fact that you get to resign is unbelievable to me. You should be fired immediately. As soon as that phone call was listened to, I don't need a trial. You just admitted it on this phone call. It's absolutely disgusting that this person is eligible for any benefits from anywhere, any taxpayers. And I think, like you said, this is not a one-off thing. This is the norm. And we see time after time the police union, the FPO, going and defending police officers when they kill people, unarmed people. It doesn't matter. It's just automatically they defend these officers, even when they are blatantly wrong. That is not the purpose, or shouldn't be the purpose of the police union. And there's no accountability, and it weakens people's trust in police overall. The idea that you could be in jail, resign for your position, and still get taxpayers' money is unbelievable to me. Who wrote your handbook? Who wrote your handbook? What I'm saying. This is no HR at all. This is disgusting to the highest level.
100%. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, like they say in the movies, with great power comes great responsibility. We give them incredible power in a number of different areas, but you should be held responsible for what you choose to do. And when it gets to the point of violent rapes, no, you don't get the pension. You chose your life, okay? And you should be stuck with the consequences of your choice. But anyway, hopefully they will be successful in their effort to change the law. This is Janelle Wilkins as well as Jill Carter. So hopefully we'll be checking in. Hopefully they'll succeed in getting this passed. Dozens of other states have it already. I don't see why this would be such a hard sell. Okay, with that said, let's change things up. Talk about one more topic. Donald Trump has a new scapegoat for why the red wave didn't manifest in the last election. He's blaming anti-abortion Republicans. He bleated just yesterday, "It wasn't my fault that the Republicans didn't live up to expectations in the capital M mid capital T terms." Weird. "I was 233-20. It was the abortion issue poorly handled by many Republicans, especially those that firmly insisted on no exceptions, even in the case of rape, incest, or life of the mother, that lost large numbers of capital V voters.
Also, the people that pushed so hard for decades against abortion got their wish from the US Supreme Court and just plain disappeared, not to be seen again. Plus Mitch stupid dollars. I don't even know what that means. I think it means that he allocated campaign funds unwisely, which, yeah, maybe he did. He's got to throw in something about the broken old crow. Anyway, his bigger issue is with anti-abortion Republicans. And look, I think he's right and wrong. He's definitely responsible for some of those losses. I don't think it was on the Supreme Court or the anti-abortion Republicans that Herschel Walker was a train wreck or Dr. Oz was a horrible pick. Donald Trump was singularly, I think, responsible for some of those choices. But the direction that the Republican Party chose to go in, and I don't just mean in the election, I mean in pushing for Roe v. Wade to be destroyed, that definitely didn't help them. What's interesting though is that while I think he is kind of onto something, they are going to fight against this as much as possible. The Susan B. Anthony organization, this is an anti-abortion right-wing organization, they tweeted in response to this, "The approach to winning on abortion in federal races proven for a decade is this. State clearly the ambitious consensus pro-life position and contrast that with the extreme view of Democrat appointments." Yeah, you can tweet that. That doesn't make it true. People don't agree with your position on abortion. They didn't today. They didn't in the midterms. They didn't 10 or 20 years ago. People have largely been in favor of reproductive rights as long as anyone hearing this has been alive. And for once, Donald Trump is trying to push them in the right direction, and they are going to fight against it. Mondale, what do you think?
I think it's funny how Trump has no cut card. Trump will literally change his mind on anything at any given moment and act as if it didn't happen. We know that he was one of these extreme far right anti-abortion people, like, until he wasn't. Right? In 2020, he created this fetal tissue board that were all anti-abortion for at least 10 of the 15 people were so-called scientists, but all of them were anti-abortionists. And he went along with this. I mean, he tried to cut federal funding for fetal tissue research, all of that. So I think this idea that you can come in and well, he can't do it. He's done it, and it's how he won an election. And the Republicans will allow him to do this, and they'll take, somebody will take blame. Susan B. Anthony better watch out, because he may come at them for saying something against what he said, and then he'll have the Trump mob go behind him and do the same thing. So I think whenever Trump does this, it signals one thing. The Republican Party is about to shift, is known. Immediately, Trump said something, so the Republican Party will have a softer stance on abortion, I think, going forward. And it's not because they lost the election, it's because they don't want Trump and his base to be against them. They are, regardless if they are a minority of Americans, it's where the Republican Party tends to follow suit. So I'm, here we go, at least abortion, maybe we'll get the Supreme Court to revisit it, who knows. Trump said something, so Republicans will start pushing for it. We definitely know Kevin McCarthy, if he becomes leader, will not go against whatever Trump says. And if that's the reason Republicans lost, according to Trump, then it will be, and it'll become a part of the Republican platform, especially since he's already announced 2024 presidential run.
Yeah. So
that's what's gonna happen.
Yeah. By the way, you know, I realize I'm not giving him that much credit to begin with, but I'm gonna take back whatever credit I did, because even if he can kind of see accurately that their extreme radical position on abortion has hurt them, he did appoint three of the justices who voted to destroy Roe v. Wade. He definitely chose them in part to do that. So no, Donald, you are again responsible for basically all of this at this point. By the way, according to exit polling, 27% of voters said that abortion was not just an important issue for their vote, it was the most important issue. It was second behind only inflation, and it was a close second in that. So people were really thinking about this. I'll show you the most recent polling, the most recent as well as historic voting on abortion accessibility. By the way, while the percentage of Americans that believe that it should be legal under certain circumstances has been largely consistent for many decades at this point, you can see that once again, the legal under any circumstances has been shooting up over the past decade or so, especially sharply since Roe v. Wade was destroyed. So this is people responding to what they're seeing coming from the Republican Party. So, and by the way, we don't have time to talk about this, but I saw this article a couple of days ago of Republicans rethinking their abortion strategy. This is their recalibration.
again, this isn't like the Republican base. This isn't them changing their mind. This is a couple of Republicans in leadership who seem to agree with Donald Trump. We'll see if they're successful in actually changing course. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the first hour of the show. When we come back, we got Rick Strom joining us. We're gonna talk about some more stories, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.